With MSO Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and we are continuing with our coaches' files here, our coaches' profiles, I should say, on MSO Sports during the summer. Special feature. Great to have with us now Essex Tech football coach Dan Connors. And coach, welcome back to MSO. It's been a while. How's your summer going?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me. It's been a wonderful summer.
Coach, I know we've got to talk about at some point the transition over to the Cape Ann League, which I think is it's just great for the league. But let's go back and let me ask you about your first contact with football. At what age, and what are your memories about that?
Wow. I'm from Everett. I born and raised, and I played for Everett High School. And my first contact. So I was a guy that was too heavy to play Pop Warner. And Coach Paul Funk, the late, great Paul Funk, who was a science teacher at the middle school in Everett, talked me up. You know, I was a big kid. Couldn't wait till I got to the high school, but I could never play because it was back in the day where you had a weight limit to play Pop Warner. So that was my very first contact. And then my very next contact after that, I would say, was with Coach Mike Milo, who is now at Catholic Memorial with DIB, talking to him and you know, getting his teachings right away, and his intensity for the game, like, it set the tone for me probably for the rest of my life and my football career. And that's where I built an identity. I feel like I owe a lot to football. I was a decent athlete, but I didn't really find my way until I put pads on, and I wasn't able to do so until freshman year. And thank God I did. But those are my first experiences.
Were you a football fan before you went to the high school? You know, even though you couldn't play youth football.
I love football. With the older kids down the park, you know, I'd watch the Patriots. Played all the video games, like the earlier video games, not like the really cool ones that they play now, but always played like sandlot ball, you know, tag rush, tackle, like all that stuff, whenever I could, but I never got a chance to play, like I said, because Pop Warner had a weight limit back then. So
yeah, I remember as a kid in the eighth grade, I think I was playing 2-on-2 football in the snow, just making up your own game, and it was just great to be out there. Let me ask you about the Everett experience, because Bill and I used to broadcast Beverly games for quite a while at WESX. And back when we first started, way back in the 80s, Beverly used to beat Everett. But then there was this transition into what Everett became. And you were part of that. So as a high school student, especially as a freshman, I'm sure you probably knew the legacy of the Crimson at that time. What were your feelings like as a freshman going into that program and wanting to play on that team?
You basically grow up watching them. When you're in seventh and eighth grade, Everett's a place where, or used to be a place at least, when, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, when I was coming into high school, everybody went to the game. Everybody. Aunts, uncles, grandmothers, friends of friends of friends, the whole school. There was, I mean, just to play Medford, there might be 10, 15,000 people there. It was ingrained in the town. So going into it, that's what you were excited about, but you learned the ins and outs of the program, you know, as you went through the program. And as a freshman, it was very, very clear that this was a player-run culture, that the players knew exactly what was expected to be great year in and year out. And that's what was instilled in me the day one, you know, day one to my last day as a senior. Guys like Diamond Ferry, Omar Easy was a little before him, but I had contact with him. But I remember Diamond, you know, he was one of the mainstays in like bringing us up, taking us under their wing, but also being really tough and getting us to understand what the expectation is and what the resolve is in the Everett program. And that's really the magic of that program, especially during that time.
So did the older kids accept the younger kids coming into the program?
Yes, they did. And they knew that we were important. That was the most important thing. They didn't think that they were better. They were, you know, they didn't think they were better than us, or they didn't consider themselves higher just because they were seniors. They had a duty to make sure that we won the next Super Bowl. And that was built everywhere that we went, in the hallways, not, you know, in the weight room, everywhere but the field, and then obviously the field, but basically everywhere we went. If we walked into Dunkin' Donuts and Broadway, there was a way that we did it. Like, it was everything. But that was wonderful. That was unbelievable because you really bought into something.
Yeah, it sets a tone for the legacy and the culture of the town, for sure. You know, and a source of pride, especially as you say, if you conduct yourselves the way you did in public places, that's terrific. Let me ask you about your progression through the program, Dan. Tell me about what it was like to learn the game, excuse me, and learn the position or positions from freshman year right on up through when you became a captain.
Well, the progression came from Mike Milo, like I said, probably one of the best coaches in Massachusetts. Definitely one of the best assistants is Mike Milo at Catholic Memorial now. He was a mechanic of the game. He was a master of technique and mechanics. So that's really the base of every football player at Everett, and that was a base for me, especially for me, because I was 5'9 or 5'10 or something, and you know, I wasn't gifted with size or speed or length or anything. So he used to tell me, not so nicely, that I better work on this stuff because it's going to make me a good football player, and I believe them. So I guess that's like one of the biggest things. That's one of the biggest things that he installed. So or that was kind of the bigger concepts, I guess.
And so tell me about your playing time as it grew from freshman through senior.
It was nice as a freshman and a sophomore because they were great players ahead of me. And that's the nice thing about Everett, where depth really wasn't an issue, where, like, freshmen and sophomores were rarely called upon to play. Like, if you were a really, really special player, then you would play as a freshman or a sophomore, but they were very rare. So I really got to learn and observe and study and get hit, you know, and get hit and get knocked down and have success, like, at my own level. And the expectation is that you start as a junior. Like, when everybody clears out, you're either competing for real for a job, or you're the next guy up. You know, maybe you were a rotator. And you got some time as a sophomore, but you're the next guy up. But generally, the expectation is that you start as a junior and you carry the torch into your senior year. That's what happened to me. I played left tackle on the 2001 team that won a Super Bowl, and obviously a captain and center on the 2002 team as a senior. So that's kind of your progression.
The what about playing time, Dan? Because I've seen Everett over the years, and sometimes coach could roll out, my God, two or three units on each side of the ball. Did you get plenty of playing time as a junior and a senior?
Yeah. So the nice thing about the nice thing about depth and having a lot of guys that can play is that as a lineman, I played center. I didn't have to play defense. I didn't have to go two ways. This is great for two reasons. One, I stay relatively fresh for the games. Two, in practice, we're competing against a number one defense, and that number one defense is pretty good. So you're getting like really good reps against really good players. So playing time's not an issue because you had a role, like everyone had a role. And you weren't expected to do too much, and we had that. That was really an advantage of our team, especially against some really, really tough teams like Brockton that we played in St. John's Prep in the Super Bowl in 2002. So,
oh yeah, classic battles. When you get together with some of your classmates and teammates from those two championship teams, give me a story or two that you recount. You know, in terms of a game, I'm sure the Super Bowl is probably at the top of the list. But what is it you guys talk about when you get together?
We talk about you know, we talk a lot about the battle. I guess that's number one. Like some of the really good players and the really good teams that we played against, and we talk now when we sit around and we're like, how did we beat these guys? like some of the St. John's prep teams, like a 2002 team that had John Goff on it, Jonathan Loyt, Nick Borsetti, there was a guy, I believe his name was McCarthy. These are all bona fide Division I college athletes, like all of them. John Goff played linebacker for the Giants for 4 years. So it's, you know, we sit around, we're scratching our heads. It's like, I mean, we beat some really good teams and we were able to do something really special. That's the first thing that we talk about, I think. And then like the specific thing that we talk about is when we used to, so Everett used to travel for camp. We used to go to Cape Cod, and stay for, it was either maybe three nights. It was like a weekend, like a long weekend. We always talk about that and how hard that was. So hard. You know, triple sessions. You're talking true triple sessions.
Good grief, yeah.
You know, 6 a.m. waking up, walking the beach, it's cold. You know, by 9 a.m. somehow it's like 95 degrees. Of course it's 95 degrees because you got to go out there with pads on. And then kind of getting through that and then like talking about the big celebration at the end, because it was a big bonfire at the end. We would scrimmage Bridgewater Raynham down there. They would be down there with us, and actually Salvio Prep was down there at one point, so we played them as well. But after, there was a huge celebration with all the families
Wow.
before we went home. So we always talk about that as well.
Sounds like spectacular memories. I got to ask you now, as a lineman, who are your closer friends, skilled players or other linemen?
Other linemen.
Okay. They understand your language, right? You understand each other's language?
Yep, best people in the world.
Okay. I believe that. I tell you what, I'm a little guy, and so the big guys in school, the big football players who protected me, man, I got nothing but respect for them. All right, let's move on to college, because pretty interesting career in college as well. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I played at Springfield. I met Coach Sarah Sulo, who's the head coach now, when I was a senior. He came down just to see us. They were recruiting good players, but guys that were kind of undersized. I was definitely undersized, being under 6 feet. And they ran the triple option offense. So they wanted smaller athletic guys to come and play for them. So it was between Endicott, Salve Regina, and Springfield. Springfield was actually my third choice. I loved Endicott. They were just starting the program. That was the first year of the program. That was their first recruiting class. I loved Endicott's campus. I really, really loved Salve Regina. But then I went to Springfield, and it just kind of felt different.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they kind of walked you around, and the way that they talked about athletics, the way that they talked about the football team, it reminded me of home. So I kind of got drawn to there, like third. My third choice came my first choice pretty quickly. And I'm a guidance counselor, so I can say this: when they give you the best package financially, that plays into it too.
That helps. Oh yeah.
I'm from Everett. I don't really have, you know, I grew up in a triple decker, so it's not like we have a lot of money. So that was really important. They gave me a really nice package, like treated me really well. So that's where I went.
Well, Paul Ingram, a friend of mine, I taught with Paul for many years at Gloucester High School, and he coached Gloucester High School. Well, he coached a lot of places, but he ended up a very successful head coach at Gloucester High School. He went to Springfield, and he was a quarterback out there and absolutely loved it. And
yep.
He had a great career coaching, as you are in the middle of. what about this? I read in the Salem News about, and I didn't know this, you had a running back while you were playing up front who won the rushing title in the country 2 years in a row?
Yeah. So when I was at Springfield, I want to say my senior year, there was a guy named Chris Sharp who was the quarterback in his triple option offense. So the quarterback gets a lot of carries. So not only would he win a rushing title, but he won the Marlboro Trophy, which is basically the Heisman of Division III. So that team was awesome. We were 10-0. We were 9-1. We lost to Ithaca. We were 9-1 going into the playoffs. I think we were ranked in the country. And it was largely because of him. And I was on that offensive line. So it's like one of my big honors. Like, I don't have any individual stuff. It's all team stuff for offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm proud to play in front of him. And some other good players. So
one of the things we try to do, Dan, at least I'm pretty sure we try to do, is when we talk to you guys as coaches, you know, when you read a story, we can't get to all the games. So when you read it in the paper, it's always about the statistics. And one of the things we try to do with high school kids, especially, is to point out, you know, those guys in the trenches, because as you just said, there's no glory. You don't get the stats. But if it weren't for you guys, there wouldn't be any football. So, you know, it's important, and I'm glad you bring that up when you said that you were proud to play in front of him, but hell, he was proud to play behind you. So, you know.
Yeah, I hope so, if you talk to him.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Now, taking all of this into account, how did you end up getting into coaching?
So going into grad school, I stayed at Springfield. I was convinced to stay because I had a medical red shirt because I broke my ankle junior year. So I had a decision to make after my senior year. I still had a year of football. I could come as a grad student and play. And at that point, I was 22 years old. I still had no idea what I wanted to do. I had a psychology degree. I was thinking like sports medicine or sports psych or something like that, but I really didn't know. I just wanted to play football. I still was in football mode. And then it was, as I started to think about it down the road, I ended up majoring in school counseling. And I saw it as kind of a pathway, and my vision became clear in what I was supposed to do. And my biggest influences were football coaches. I owe my life to the game. I owe my whole personality, my philosophy, and everything that I say, I owe to football almost 100% of it. I give my parents some credit, but so it's this intense need to give back to football.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I got into coaching. That's why I do what I do now as far as football coaching. So,
all right. Now the journey, that was what was North Shore Volk and is now Essex Tech. That has been an incredible evolution. And the level of competition that Essex Tech student athletes now perform at is just out of this world. So reflect a little bit on that, about your journey at what is now Essex Tech.
I think we've come a really long way. So I've been there in 2009, since 2009, coaching with Paul Wirth. And he already had a great tradition at North Shore Tech. And that tradition continued through the years. But we've seen things evolve as we've gotten bigger, I believe. We're scheduling tougher teams because we feel like we have bigger and deeper rosters. So we want to test our might a little bit. And that's kind of the evolution, I guess. Like, as we've gotten bigger, our divisions have gone up. When our divisions go up, we get exposed to other schools. When we get exposed to other schools, we get asked to join the K-Band.
So,
that's kind of how, but that's kind of been, in the making. This is a huge step for us, and it's another step in our evolution, I guess.
Oh, I think it's a terrific move for both you and the Cape Ann League. I think it's a natural evolution too, it seems. Coach, I got to ask you, this has been preying on my mind. I never, as I said, Paul Ingram is a good friend of mine, but I never asked him this question. He played one position primarily. You played line primarily. How do you relate, or how do you, I don't even know how to ask it correctly, but you have to teach everything to everybody. And I know you rely on assistants, which is part of the process. So how do you teach the game to everybody? Because as the head coach, you sort of have to know everything about the game, don't you?
Yep. Experience. I did not know. I told Paul in my first interview that I'm very good and proficient with the big guys in front. Like, if you need blocking schemes, if you need to read a front, if you need to tell, if you need a scouting report on a defensive front or offensive front, if you need to design plays, I can tell you how to block it. I'm all good there, 100%. As the players get smaller, I get weaker. It's because when you're playing guard, you only see what a guard sees.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
Up to that point,
yep.
Up to that point, that's all I've seen. That's all I cared about. And I don't care about formation. I don't care necessarily what Chris Sharp was doing behind me. I was worried about my job and what I was supposed to do. So I was still kind of in that mode. It took a lot of mentoring from Paul Wirth, from Greg Haviland, from my former coaches to really get an all 22 look of the game. I'm still improving at that. You know, one of the weaknesses of offensive line, like head coaches, is that we see tunnel vision. Like we only see the trenches, but I've gotten 1,000% better with that. So I guess the answer is just time and experience. Well, a lot of patience from the people that I coach with.
So. Yeah, and that certainly makes sense. It's a study. It's a continuum. You have to keep. And I'm guessing with all the video stuff now, and your assistant coaches, you're able to learn even more as you go along.
Yeah. Yep. You have to definitely. So I've learned so much from. So Jody Norton is at the school, and he was the offensive coordinator for the last 3 years. And I give him a lot of credit because he's very obsessed with offense and he's obsessed with the X's and O's. That's what makes him a wonderful coach. So I wasn't really proficient in the passing game. Like I'm very smash mouth, like run orientated, because it has a lot to do with the offensive line. I'm selfish. So so I had to learn, like, as we get bigger and as we get better athletes and we get legitimate quarterbacks, there's a need to throw the ball. So I actually gave the offense to Jody because he had a better understanding of it. And through that process, I've learned so much about the passing game, and how to use formations and concepts, and how to teach quarterbacks how to read plays. Like, I didn't know that 5 years ago. Like it's definitely a process, and it's definitely, like, as you said, it's sometimes it's like relying on other people on your staff to kind of teach you that. So.
Yeah, but doesn't that feel good to learn like that? Because it's like, oh, okay, this is something I didn't know. I didn't know, and now I do.
Yep. I love it. And especially it's, you know, with my upbringing as a front guy and an offensive line guy, I don't mind that. I'm very egoless. Like, I can freely admit to you publicly that's what happened.
That's leadership, man. That's you have an ego. All coaches and competitors have healthy egos, thank God. But that's leadership. It's understanding that, okay, someone else may know something that you don't, but damn it, you can get it and learn it, and then you can apply it to the kids, that's the most critical thing, obviously, Dan, as a school counselor. As a football coach, you're a counselor anyway, but now on top of that, you have the experience and the training, to bring all those other things into play. And with your experience at Everett and Springfield, tell me about how you, and this is kind of a loaded question, but in general, when you talk to your seniors looking to go to school the following year, either to play or not to play, what is some of the advice you give them? Because you must have to look not only at their academics, and maybe not even college, but into some other trade or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
How do you counsel these kids? Because I'm betting they rely on you a whole lot as both coach and counselor.
Yeah, are we talking specifically football players if they decide to play, or just in general?
I think just in general.
So the biggest thing I say to all kids, I think, is really important, is that this generation is great. They're high achievers. They question things, but they question things because they're curious, and they question things because they want to make it better. But they can get really caught up in, like, the resume building and the status and, like, taking a lot of, you know, really challenging classes and overloading themselves because they want to make themselves look unique and special. So the biggest thing that I say to my students is that when you go to college, it's about who you network with, and it's about kind of how hard you work. And it's, you know, getting to your internships and doing wonderful things at your internships, meeting people through that, and those people know people, and all of a sudden you're in a really good job. That's what happened to me. I tell the health assisting students that, you know, I would say, young lady, like, if you save my life someday, I'm not going to ask you what your GPA was.
Or exactly.
Not going to, you know, if you pull me, you know, this guy who was a DN for me last year, I said, Luke, if you pull me out of a burning building, he's going to be a firefighter. If you pull me out of a burning building, like, I'm not going to ask you, you know, your take on Shakespeare. Like, it's, you know, it's about what you do and what you can do that makes you special, not your, you know, GPA or, like, what classes you're taking and, because I want them to be more relaxed around that process. That's like the biggest thing that I say to them.
I think it sounds great. I mean, we try to give our daughter that same advice when she was going through college or into college. And it's the story about the person who finishes at the bottom of medical school, what she called when she graduates. Doctor. So, you know, it's
doctor,
it,
yep.
That's all that counts. And great advice, man. Finally, I think, Coach, Essex Tech is about to embark on a great journey into the Cape Ann League, and I'm really excited about that aspect of the league and so on. As you have progressed now as a head coach over the years, this is what, your eighth season coming up?
I think so. Yep.
Okay. What's gotten easier for you in terms of the coaching aspect of it, whether it's the organization or the X's and O's? And what I'm talking about, if you go back to that first year as head coach, I'm sure it was a whirlwind. But, you know, maybe one thing was more difficult than something else. What's gotten easier for you now as you get ready for this next season?
I think it is X's and O's. I think it is. Because as a front guy, like, we have a ton of strengths. But like I said, front guys, offensive line guys, tend to get tunnel vision around offense, and they get tunnel vision even around defense, like how they understand how defenses work. So I think my evolution in the spread game, I just said the S word, spread game.
I'm sorry.
understanding real passing concepts and marrying them with what I believe it should be. Is, I think, my biggest improvement over the last 5 years. So that has gotten easier. Like, I can sit down and say, I have this guy, this guy, this guy. These are my 11. This is what I'm designing. This is going to work. I know it is. As opposed to, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know how this guy fits in. We can do something simple here, but people are going to expose it. Like, you know, I'm doubting myself. Like, that's like really changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's the biggest thing.
Okay. All right, the last question, I promise. Today, we're a week away from opening up football camp. What's on your mind about your team going into this season right now?
Who is going to be the role players, I guess? Who is going to fill in the positions that are question marks? There are a lot of guys that could. But somebody needs to. And that's, I guess, the most exciting thing and the thing I'm looking forward to. It's also the thing I'm most nervous about. You know, who's gonna fill that outside backer spot that we need? Who's gonna play safety? Who's gonna fill that other tight end? Who's our left tackle? And there's question marks all over the place. There's guys out there that we think are gonna do it, but it's exciting and kind of anxiety-driven at the same time.
Absolutely. Oh, I totally get that. Dan, thanks for taking the time today. It's great to know you a little bit better, a lot better. I appreciate it. And we're going to be calling you, of course, during the season and talking about the kids that you have.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Coach. Be well. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That is Dan Connors, who is the head football coach at Essex Tech. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.